Tonight, getting nasty. Donald Trump calls Ted Cruz a maniac as Cruz surges ahead in Iowa. And the GOP establishment grapples with a nightmare scenario hours from a critical showdown. Court-martial Bo Bergdahl, the American Army Sergeant freed in a controversial prisoner swap with the Taliban, now facing a potential life sentence here, charged with desertion and endangering the lives of fellow troops. Record shattered with winter just over a week away, it feels like spring across much of the country. What's causing it? And you won't believe how long it will last. And autism risk? Doctors report a connection between pregnant women taking antidepressants and an increased chance of having a baby with autism. What all expectant parents should know. Nightly News begins right now.
From NBC News World Headquarters in New York, this is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt.
Good evening. A suddenly surging Ted Cruz has set the stage for a potential Republican showdown in Iowa between two men who entered this race as outsider bookends to the GOP mainstream. Several new polls there show Senator Cruz rapidly moving up on Donald Trump, pitting the two into open political warfare and presenting a challenge and a dilemma to the party establishment. All coming on the eve of tomorrow's next Republican debate. NBC's Casey Hunt has the latest.
Less than 50 days out from the Iowa caucuses, Ted Cruz is closing in on Donald Trump, and their unofficial truce officially over.
Look at the way he's dealt with the Senate, where he goes in there like a, you know, frankly, like a little bit of a maniac.
So far, Cruz is laughing off Trump's attacks, taking to Twitter with a link to the famous maniac theme from Flashdance. Trump is still leading in national polls. But in Iowa, a new Des Moines Register poll shows Cruz beating Trump by 10 percentage points.
Cruz crew, time to rock.
What's behind the Cruz surge? A sophisticated ground game in Iowa. Maggie Wright and her husband drove up to Des Moines from Texas.
Long drive.
Yes, 13 and a half hours.
They're joining dozens of volunteers who are so dedicated, they're paying their own way to bunk in a dorm known as Camp Cruz.
You are actually in dorm beds.
Yes, my husband says, let's bunk them.
Oh, fantastic.
This is where Camp Cruz becomes the strike force, getting equipped with tablets that show them just which doors to knock on and what to say as they try to convince Iowa voters to pick Ted Cruz.
Can Ted Cruz count on your support in the caucus?
Yes.
But not everyone is sold, and there are signs Trump's attacks are hitting home.
There's just a little bit something just about his persona that comes across to me that I just haven't bought yet.
The GOP establishment never saw it coming. The Republican nomination fight now between two outsiders who've made few friends inside the party.
Trump and Cruz could be a disaster for the Republican Party. It's going to be difficult potentially for the party to win over mainstream voters in swing states.
Republicans are gathering here in Las Vegas ahead of the last debate of the year. Also today, Donald Trump releasing a letter from his doctor saying that if he wins, he'd be, quote, the healthiest individual ever elected to the presidency. Lester.
All right, Casey, thank you. Now to that stunning turn of events for U.S. Army Sergeant Bo Bergdahl, held captive by the Taliban for 5 years after walking away from his base in Afghanistan, then finally freed last year in a dramatic and controversial prisoner swap. Many called Bergdahl a deserter, or worse. And now tonight, he's facing a court-martial, as our Pentagon correspondent Jim Mikulczewski reports.
My name is Bo Bergdahl.
Held hostage by the Taliban for 5 years, Sergeant Bo Bergdahl can now face life in a military prison. The Army today ordered Bergdahl to face court-martial for desertion and endangering the safety of his fellow soldiers.
20 minutes out, I'm going, good grief, I'm in over my head. Suddenly, you know, it really starts to sink in that I really did something bad.
In his first-person account for the podcast Serial, Bergdahl describes how he walked away from his outpost in eastern Afghanistan to warn Army commanders of leadership problems, but was soon captured by a group of heavily armed Taliban fighters.
I'm not stupid enough. I'm going to try to knife off a bunch of guys with AK-47s.
Bergdahl was released in a controversial prisoner swap for five Taliban prisoners held at Guantanamo Bay. That same day, President Obama welcomed Bergdahl's parents to the Rose Garden.
It's wonderful.
Thank you.
A good day.
Yes, it's a good day.
Today, Bergdahl's attorney called the charges against his client excessive.
The government had shown probable cause for one thing only, which was a one-day AWOL.
The Army itself is split over this case. Many believe that Bergdahl should be punished for putting the lives of his fellow soldiers at risk. But the investigator in the case suggests that any jail time for Bergdahl would be inappropriate.
Bergdahl remains on active duty. No date has been set for his court-martial. Jim Mikluszewski, NBC News, The Pentagon.
Many Americans are on edge following the recent terror attacks in Paris and San Bernardino. In our brand new NBC News Wall Street Journal poll, 40% say the federal government's top priority is national security and terrorism. That number has more than doubled since April. And 29% say they're worried that they or a loved one will be the victim of a terror attack. But today, for the second time in just over a week, President Obama argued that his strategy against ISIS is working. This time, he made those comments in a rare appearance at the Pentagon.
Last month in November, we dropped more bombs on ISIL targets than any other month since this campaign started. The point is, ISIL leaders cannot hide, and our next message to them is simple: you are next.
The president was at the Pentagon for a meeting with his National Security Council. On Thursday, he will also visit the National Counterterrorism Center before traveling to Hawaii on Friday for Christmas vacation. Let's turn now to the missed signs in the San Bernardino terror attack. As of now, screeners do not regularly look at social media for people applying to come to this country on so-called fiancé visas. But that could change now that we know one of the killers left clues on social media before she came here. But they weren't flagged until too late. We get more from our Pete Williams.
Well before she applied to come to the United States, officials say, Tashfeen Malik was expressing support for violent jihad on social media. But the U.S. agencies that reviewed her application for a fiancé visa did not know that. Now the Obama administration is reviewing whether social media for visa applicants should be checked, something many employers already do.
The social media has placed a whole new burden and a whole new set of questions, but not impossible ones to resolve.
Here's how the process works. A U.S. citizen applies for a K-1 visa to bring in a fiancé from overseas. The name of the foreign applicant is checked against U.S. terrorism databases. Then State Department officers overseas get the applicant's fingerprints and check criminal records. But surprisingly, even in Pakistan, where Tashfeen Malik is from, the process seldom includes a face-to-face interview.
We only interview people in the K-1 visa program in cases where there is some issue that needs to be explored.
Tonight, two U.S. officials say Tashfeen Malik's jihadist messages were missed, not only because they weren't checked, but also because they were sent privately to the Facebook page of her sister, not posted publicly. Meantime, investigators work to build a timeline for what Malik and Syed Farouk were doing before and after the shooting. The FBI took surveillance video from this car dealership looking for images of the SUV the couple was driving.
There was a moment that a vehicle very similar to that, a newer model Ford Excursion, I believe that's what it was, had passed by the dealership.
Tonight, the chairman of the House Homeland Security Committee says it will consider a bill to require in-person interviews and social media screenings for visa applicants. Last year, the number of fiancé visas was about 36,000. Lester?
Pete Williams, thanks. Tonight, we're just over a week from winter, but you wouldn't know it across much of the country where it's so warm it feels like spring. And heat records are dropping left and right. Temperatures in the 60s and 70s, where last year they were already buried in snow. NBC's Dylan Dreyer reports on the reason and how long into winter this will last.
Just 8 days before the official start of winter, a December heat wave has set more than 1,000 record high temperatures across the Northeast and Midwest. Out west, it's another story. Winter is in full effect. Treacherous roads and packed slopes. But ski resorts back east are seeing green, and not the good kind.
We really need the temperatures to change, or at least become more, a little more seasonal, so that we can get a product out and get the facility open.
By this time last year, upstate New York was already buried by snowstorms. Up to 6 feet of snow fell in parts of western New York. What a difference a year makes. With no snow so far this December, Buffalo broke a 116-year-old record. Last year's bone-chilling temperatures have given way to this. Record temperatures reaching new highs. 70 in Philadelphia, 71 in Buffalo, and 72 in Baltimore. It's like weather whiplash, thanks in part to El Nino.
What we are seeing this year is a near record-setting El Nino pattern over the Pacific Ocean, which is transporting very warm air across the entire United States.
With El Nino reaching its peak, the country can expect several more weeks of mild temps in the Midwest and Northeast and storms out west. But as we approach February, a more typical winter should return.
Now here in New York City, it is still 61 degrees after hitting a high of 65 earlier today. And for those of you hoping for a white Christmas, I'm sorry, but it looks like most of the country will not be seeing one this year. Don't worry, it will snow eventually. It's just not going to get here in time for Christmas. Lester?
All right, Dylan Dreyer tonight in New York. Thank you. It happened exactly 3 years ago today, a massacre of innocents, one of the worst mass shootings in our nation's history. 20 children, ages 6 and 7, murdered, along with 6 adults, at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut. In the aftermath, there was a sense in this country that something would change, whether it be gun laws, better access to mental health care, or some other solution. But as our Stephanie Goss reports, hundreds of children have lost their lives to gun violence in this country since that awful day 3 years ago.
One name on this list would be one too many. Instead, at least 555 children under the age of 12 have died from firearms since the shooting at Sandy Hook School. Roughly one child every other day for the last 3 years. The numbers compiled by NBC News show children are no safer from guns now than they were before the Newtown shooting, even though overall gun violence in the country has dropped. The stories are as varied as they are tragic.
Why did this have to happen? Why couldn't it have just been me?
Hai Vu's 10-year-old son Aaron was killed when two gunmen robbed Vu's Miami business and opened fire. 9-year-old Tyshawn was murdered because gang members allegedly had a vendetta against his father. 9-month-old Corbin was napping when his 5-year-old brother found their grandfather's .22 caliber revolver and fired a single deadly shot. Some of the deaths could have been avoided with better gun safety. And with gun sales on the rise, it's a focus for some dealers.
People who have loaded guns in the house are just asking for a problem if they have young children.
Bob Vidin's family has owned this gun shop in New Jersey since the 70s. He actually helped write the state law requiring a gun lock be sold with every gun.
You have to have a license to drive a car. Is it your feeling that that should extend to
I have no problem with people carrying guns should go through some type of training or to go pass a test to make sure they're qualified.
Vidin is among 84% of Americans who support background checks for all gun sales. But legislation on background checks went nowhere in Congress.
Right now, we are being distracted by cultural debates rather than on the central policy questions that are important to keeping Americans safe from gun violence.
Still, since the Newtown shooting, 41 states have passed their own laws strengthening gun regulation, not willing to wait for Congress. Evidence that in some places, these faces have broken the gridlock. Stephanie Gosk, NBC News, Glassboro, New Jersey.
Still ahead here tonight, could you be putting your child at higher risk of developing autism? What a new study has to say about pregnant women who take antidepressants. Also, what you're required to do if you're getting one of these hot holiday gifts or else risk a fine over $1,000. We're back with news about autism that you need to hear if you or someone you love are expecting. A new study just out today found a troubling connection between mothers who take widely prescribed antidepressants and a higher risk of their children developing autism. NBC's Ann Thompson has a deeper look.
In what is a time of great expectation and anxiety for women, today a set of scary headlines. A new study finds the most commonly prescribed antidepressants, if taken during the second and third trimesters, are associated with an 87% increased risk of autism. But experts say it's a big jump of what is still a very small number.
For women who are taking antidepressant during pregnancy, they found that they have 0.5% of an increase in having an autistic child.
This is the latest study to link antidepressants to birth defects and developmental delays. The drugs in today's study are called SSRIs, with brand names such as Prozac, Paxil, and Zoloft. One manufacturer says it's reviewing the study, which does not conclude these drugs cause autism.
It's really just a correlation, not a cause and effect. So it's possible that something else has caused this increase in the group that took antidepressants.
Obstetrician Joanne Stone says she won't tell her patients to stop taking the drugs because untreated depression can be very serious.
What are the risks of not taking the medications?
So the risks of not taking the medications are an increased risk for poor pregnancy outcome, higher preterm delivery rates, higher cesarean section rates, and also potentially higher risk for adverse outcome for the babies.
Meaning women need to look at all their options for treating depression when deciding what's best for them and their babies. Ann Thompson, NBC News, New York.
We're back in just a moment with why you may not be able to buy one of the hottest holiday gifts from the biggest online retailer. Tonight on this busiest shipping day of the year for both the U.S. Postal Service and FedEx, news about two of the hottest gifts this holiday season. Amazon has stopped selling several models of those so-called hoverboards over concerns about the risk of fires caused by their lithium-ion batteries. The Consumer Product Safety Commission is investigating reports of at least 11 such instances, and all of the country's major airlines have banned them from flights. And another item on so many wish lists, drones. If you own one or you plan to give one as a gift, it will have to be registered with the government. New rules that the FAA is detailing tonight as the feds try to cut down on all those close calls between drones and airplanes, more than 1,000 just this year. Here's NBC's Tom Costello with more.
It's the must-have gadget of the year. More than 400,000 drones are expected to be sold over the holidays, a whopping 1.5 million for all of 2015. They've also crashed at sporting events, even on the White House lawn.
We just had something fly over, so I don't know if it was a drone or a balloon. It just came real quick.
Pilots report 100 drone sightings and close calls each month. Now the FAA is rolling out new rules that go into effect next Monday. All drone owners 13 and older must register their drones online, including name, address, and email. The cost, $5, though that will be waived for the first 30 days.
We think this is not just about registering. This is also about educating and providing folks with the information they need to do this safely.
Don't fly near airports or any manned aircraft.
By registering the drones, users will also get the rules. Fly below 400 feet, at least 5 miles from airports. While the drone industry today applauded registration, the Model Aircraft Association calls it an unnecessary burden for its members.
You're always going to have a guy that does something stupid.
We recently caught up with some drone enthusiasts.
Give me a list of 5 things that the government does well. You know, they're going to screw it up.
Registering drones will allow authorities to track down owners if they crash in restricted airspace. The potential fine, $1,100 per offense. Tom Costello, NBC News, Washington.
When we come back, it's the moment generations of fans have been waiting for. Tonight's the night the Force Awakens. Finally tonight, for a lucky few, the wait is over. Star Wars The Force Awakens is premiering tonight in Hollywood. It was a long time ago, way back in 1977, when the original became a force in popular culture. Now, all these years later, as our Joe Fryer reports, the new sequel is the most widely anticipated movie of the year.
In a galaxy far, far away, better known as Hollywood, Star Wars lovers are already lining up outside the famous TCL Chinese Theater to see the next installment.
It's really just like any family reunion. You know, you make time for it. You can't miss it.
When it's all said and done and the movie premieres, some of these fans will have spent 12 days in line. Caroline Ritter and Andrew Porters traveled from Australia. And before seeing the movie Thursday, they'll get married right here. So what's more important?
Technically the wedding, but the movie is...
Set about 30 years after Return of the Jedi, The Force Awakens will introduce a new crop of characters and mark the return of Princess Leia, now a general, and Han Solo.
We're home.
The movie is expected to earn between $1.5 and $2 billion worldwide, maybe more.
Incredible numbers that could be record-breaking and could be in the top three movies of all time.
The star-studded world premiere takes place tonight in Hollywood, but when the original movie premiered in 1977, there was little fanfare.
They were completely surprised when, next thing you know, we have people wrapped around the block.
Somewhere in that horde of moviegoers, 3-year-old Brendan Thibodeau, 38 years later, he's back in line at the Chinese theater.
I can't wait to see it opening night. I can't wait. It's going to be amazing.
The Force is strong.
For generations old and new, it's clear the Force is still with us. Joe Fryer, NBC News, Hollywood.
That will do it for us on this Monday night. I'm Lester Holt. For all of us at NBC News, thank you for watching and good night.